the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Shot by Hayden. Oh, there it is. Yes.
Is it count,
the avalanche.
Mike?
Is it going to count? I was looking, Mike, and I
think so.
That's a goal. Absolutely, that's a goal.
Number 300.
What a win.
In Danny Briere's career, what a way to score your 300th goal.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. That, of course, Daniel Briere's 300th career NHL goal. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, you just heard his 300th career goal, the aforementioned Daniel Briere. Daniel, good morning, welcome to the program, and congratulations on a tremendous 17-year NHL career.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Daniel, obviously we wanted to bring you on, talk about that terrific career we just mentioned. It saw you play for Phoenix and Buffalo, and of course everybody remembers your stint in Philadelphia, especially the playoffs in 2009, the 2009-2010 playoffs, when you led the Flyers to the Stanley Cup Final. You got 30 points in 23 playoff games, leading the entire NHL during that playoff season. What do you remember most about that 2010 Philadelphia Flyers team that went six games against the Chicago Blackhawks? A really entertaining final. What do you remember about being able to get those 30 points?
Well, it was a two-month process where we were in a bubble and we felt like we were invincible. It started on the last regular season day. Mm-hmm. We struggled down the stretch, but every single game was a playoff game for the last month and a half of the season. But we finally get to the last regular season game. We have to play the Rangers, and the winner of that game gets to go to the playoffs, and the loser gets to go home. And I remember taking that game to a shootout. We outplayed the Rangers, but Lundqvist stood on his head, and the Rangers were just playing to get to a shootout because they were probably at the time the best team in the NHL. They certainly had the best goaltender in the shootout at the time, and we were one of the worst team. And somehow we pulled it in a shootout. We were able to beat them twice and get into the playoffs. And after that, for 2 months, we lived in a bubble where we felt invincible. That second round, especially coming back from 0-3 against the Bruins to come back and beat them four straight to clinch, and that was one of the probably best moments of my career.
Danny, we want to get more into your career, but I want to go back to about 3 or 4 weeks ago, late August, when you decided to retire. Why was it so important for you to have your retirement press conference in Philadelphia?
Well, first of all, I still live in the area. I still live in Philadelphia. My kids are going to school here. That's where they spent. They're teenagers. I have three boys that are teenagers, so it's tough to move them at that age. And I've had such a good relationship. I played the bulk of my career. The two teams that I see myself the most with are the Flyers and the Sabres. That's where I played the bulk of my career. And since I still have a great relationship with the Flyers organization, living in the area, the kids being around here, I just thought it was the best way to do it.
Danny, we talk about the Flyers run against the Blackhawks, but maybe the best team you were on, you can let us know if it was or not, was that Sabres team that lost to Carolina in the conference finals with a ton of injuries. And in my mind, you guys were the better team. Did you think about that team and think, well, if we were healthy, we might have won the cup?
Yeah, yes, there was the Flyers. We got into the Stanley Cup Finals, and it's something I'll always remember. I'll never forget that. We were so close, and we ended up facing a really good team in the Stanley Cup Finals in the Blackhawks, and they deserved to win. The one I think that hurts even more is, like you mentioned, the Sabres, when we came out of the lockout and we made it. It was kind of a surprise. We beat the Ottawa Senators in the second round and a little bit of an upset. But then you know, I felt that out of the last four teams left, we had the best team. And then every game we were just losing another defenseman. And we were down to two regulars. And even Brian Campbell at the time was like our sixth, seventh defenseman, if you can believe it, you know, as one of our regular. Everybody was hurt on defense. They were falling like flies. It was so frustrating to see, so disappointing. You get so close, and I felt, and I still feel to this day, that we had the best team left in that group of four. But it just shows you there's so many things that need to go right. There's so many bounces that need to go your way. I remember Carolina winning that year, and in the first round they go down 0-2 against mm-hmm. Montreal, mm-hmm. and then Saku Koivu gets a stick in the eye. And, you know, Montreal, I think, loses four straight. They're not even able to come back. Second round, they kind of bruise through New Jersey, and then they face us in the third round. And every game, we were losing a defenseman. So, they get breaks there. And then they get to the Stanley Cup Final against the Oilers, and I think on game one, Dwayne Roloson gets hurt.
That's right.
When one of their forwards plows into the goalie. So it just shows you sometimes you need breaks to go your way. You need bounces to make it all the way, and that year it just wasn't meant to be for us.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Daniel Briere. Daniel just retired after a 17-year NHL career that saw him play for Philadelphia and Buffalo, Phoenix, Montreal, and Colorado.
And Danny, we talk about clutch performers in the playoffs, and when. To me, the past 15, 20 years, you were that guy amongst a very few number of players. I mean, you look at your regular season totals, they were great. You had over 300 NHL goals, but you were almost a point a game in the playoffs, which was even better than your regular season performance. What made you step up your game so much?
I don't know. I wish I had a better answer or something more clear-cut. You know, the only thing I can think of, and it goes back to my youth. I grew up watching hockey, Canadian boy. You know, best time of the year was when the playoffs would come on, and I remember going to bed dreaming that one day I would be that guy scoring an overtime goal in the playoffs, and you know, winning a Stanley Cup. And I think that's part of what fueled me for so many years. I you know, always dreamed of being in that moment. And you know, when I got there, I wanted to be the guy that was going to make the difference. Every time that I jumped on the ice, and you know, it's even more important in the playoffs. Every shift is big, every game is huge. I wanted to be the guy that was going to make the difference, and I told myself that before every game. I really believed that I was meant to be the guy. And sometimes it doesn't happen, and it just reinforced in my mind that, okay, that's the fluke, so next game I'm going to make the difference next game. So that was always the mindset. I always believed that it was, you know, I was meant to make the difference, make the big play, the big goal, or the big play to make a difference in every game. That's the mindset that I had. And, you know, it's not, I guess, clear. It's tough to explain, you know, but that's how I felt every game in the playoffs.
Daniel Briere is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing his 17-year NHL career. Daniel, I want to go back to the 2007 season. That was your best statistical season of them all, 95 points in 81 games. It also coincided with the year where you were going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of that season. And you, of course, were the subject of a tremendous bidding war. The Philadelphia Flyers was eventually the team you signed with, signing that 8-year, $52 million contract. Take us through that unrestricted free agency process for yourself as a player. We know that there was a lot of pressure on you to go back to Montreal, obviously being from Quebec. What was it like to be, you know, the most sought-after unrestricted free agent in the NHL?
It was cool, but it was a lot of pressure. It was probably the toughest decision of my career, you know, and I remember being not knowing what to do on that day. It was a tough process trying to evaluate everything. I was really interested with what the Flyers had to offer, the direction they were going with the team, the trades and the pick up free agents, pick up they had made. And, you know, and on the flip side, I had the Montreal Canadiens, the team that I grew up loving, watching every night. So it was one of the toughest decisions. In the end, I felt that, you know, the best chance to win for me at that moment was with the Flyers. I really believed in what Paul Holmgren was doing with his team. And that's what finally made me, you know, choose the Flyers.
Danny, you know, and you did end up getting to play with the Montreal Canadiens, of course, in the 2013-2014 season. How special was that for you, being from Gatineau, Quebec, playing in the QMJHL? How special was that for you and your family? And also, you guys, you know, people, it seems like it was a long time ago, but you ended up going to the Eastern Conference Finals as well.
A very special time in my career. You know, and I realized that it wasn't probably at the top of my game. You know, is in the last few years where you start slowing down. But for me personally, it was just an awesome feeling to have the chance to say that, you know what, I did wear the Montreal Canadiens jersey, my childhood team. I was able to represent them, and nobody can take that away from me now, even that I'm retired. You know, looking back, I will always be a Montreal Canadian, and something that I'm very flattered, honored, and also very proud to say.
You know, Danny, I wanted to ask you too. You know, when you came into the NHL, you know, I mentioned, you know, you played for Drummondville in the QMJHL, and you tore it up. You had 300 plus seasons. You had 163 point season, which is, I mean, you're talking Connor McDavid numbers there. But for you, someone who led the playoffs in scoring in 2010, you've been an All-Star Game MVP. Being a player who some said, you know, and they were obviously wrong, said you were too small and you wouldn't produce in the NHL. How important is it for you to be a role model for other smaller players now in the NHL who people are saying, oh, he's never going to make it, he's too small?
Well, you know what, and I look back now, and that's, you know, at the time, yes, it was sometimes tough and frustrating to have to deal with everybody saying that you're too small and you'll never make it. But at the same time, I look back now, and it was probably the best thing that happened to me, because every day I was going out there with a chip on my shoulder, something to prove. You know, and it forced me to take my game to another level. I used that as motivation. And throughout my career, after that, I always tried to find something to motivate me, to get me going. You know, the early years were obviously using my size to my advantage, or the mindset that my size was too small, too little, to my advantage. In the later years, it was about proving that, okay, yes, I can also perform in the playoffs. Or when you're traded, when I was traded from Phoenix to Buffalo, I wanted to prove to their organization in Phoenix that they had made a mistake. When Buffalo didn't want to re-sign me, well, I had that chip on my shoulder that I had to prove to them that that was a mistake. You should have re-signed me. So I always tried to use those little things to push me to take my game to the next level, and that's what I probably would say to the young guys, or to any players for that matter in the NHL. Use whatever you can to try to push yourself to that next level.
Hockey's a strange game that way, Danny. Think about it. You know, you played with Buffalo against Carolina, losing to a team coached by Laviolette, who then became your coach, and you got traded for P.A. Parento, who was in the shootout that you talked about that got you guys into the playoffs. You know, it's a weird game that way.
It's a weird game, and you seem to always meet, you know, the people that you cross paths sometimes as opponents, and then later on you're on the same team, or like you mentioned, trades for each other. Really, hockey is such a small world, you know, and it always reconnects for some matter.
Fun question for you. I'm interested to know this answer if you want to speak to it. Who has a worse temper, Lindy Ruff or Peter Laviolette?
I think I would have to go with Lindy. You know, I love them both. I think they were amazing coaches, both of them. I only have good things to say, good memories with those two guys. You know, but Lindy is probably the coach that I had that hated losing the most. It was amazing how, you know, one day you'd win a big game and he's coming in the room and he's, you know, laughing with the guys, and the next day you lose a game you're supposed to win, and he would be the grumpiest guy around the rink. So, you know, I learned a lot from Lindy. He was great to me, and it was a pleasure to play with him, especially when those 2 years when we made it to the conference finals in back-to-back years.
Daniel, we'll let you go on this final question. Richard just asked you about some of your coaches. Who was your most fierce rival that you felt in the course of? You had some great battles. I mean, the Flyers teams you had, of course, against the Penguins.
Yeah.
We all remember the great tremendous series. Playoff battles you guys had. Pretty sure you might still be fighting on the ice. That was so entertaining back in the 2012 playoffs, particularly. Right. You know, to your mind, who was your most fierce rival in, throughout the course of your career?
You mean as a team or as a player, individual guy?
Both, either or, it doesn't matter, whatever one you want to answer.
Well, playing against Montreal was always a tough time, especially after I signed in Philadelphia, getting booed those first few years going back there. That was always extremely tough. I would have to say, probably over the course of my career, I think the Boston Bruins. And luckily, I've had a lot of success, but I was in the same division when I played in Buffalo against them, so the rivalry was pretty intense. With the Flyers, we played them a few times in the playoffs. We came back in that when we were down 0-3, we played the Winter Classic there at Fenway. So that was pretty intense. And I think one of my top moments was playing for the Habs, playing them in the playoff series. I grew up watching that, you know, Habs Boston playoff and the intensity and the rivalry, and being able to win a game 7 there once again in their building. That was that's something that I'll remember a long, long time. So in saying all that, I mean, the Bruins kept coming back and coming back. So I would have to say probably the Daniel Chara. He was one of the toughest defensemen that I've had to play against over my career. And for some reason, in a lot of those matchups, I used to be face-to-face with him, one of the toughest competitors to play against, especially when you're only about 5'9".
Daniel Briere, a fantastic 17-year NHL career, 307 goals, 389 assists, and then the playoff numbers we talked about.
Awesome,
just fantastic.
Yeah.
Just 116 points in 124 playoff games. Daniel, all the best on going forward. Thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations again on a tremendous NHL career.
Well, I want to say thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on, and for all the good words. I appreciate it.
Take care, Daniel. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Awesome. You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
On the power play with his shot, his ability to move the puck. Obviously a big body that, you know, we know he's not a crasher and banger, and that's not what we signed him for. You know, he's got a long reach, so he's it does take some space to get by him if you're going to get by him defensively. But, you know, quality competition and the right situations, offensive zone starts and all those type of things, that we think that he's a perfect fit.
Buffalo Sabres general manager Tim Murray discussing their signing of unrestricted free agent defenseman Cody Franzen earlier this week, signing him to a 2-year contract worth $6.65 million, a salary cap hit of $3.325 per season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town after two amazing weeks, Daryl Lennox. Check it out, RumorsComedyClub.com. So Cody Franzen finally finds a home.
Well, but first of all, Danny Briere, amazing job there.
Fantastic interview.
That was great.
That was a great interview. We'll put it up on the website. Yeah. We'll put it up on TSN1290.ca as well if you want to catch that interview. Daniel Briere, tremendous insight into his career.
Talked to him for 3 hours. Seriously, I mean, so many stories and just the things that he went through. Anyhow,
Cody Franzen.
Cody Franzen should probably switch agents if he hasn't already, because his agent bungled last year when not going to arbitration against the Leafs, and then he does this year, and he doesn't play the market right, and he signs a two-year deal, probably undervaluing his worth, and then certainly on a short term. I guess, though, if he's going to get undervalued, he might as well sign short term. Just an odd situation, no? Like, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's not a great skater, but he can play a physical game. He's got a booming shot. Pretty smart guy. Certainly can play a right side second pairing. And pretty good value signing here for the Buffalo Sabres, in my opinion.
We were talking about this throughout the summer. There were several teams, that were in the sweepstakes. You look at L.A., Boston was another team. That was interested in Cody Franzen, and then because the salary cap, I know you didn't want to talk about the salary cap, Drew, but because it didn't go up, Richie, as much as we thought it was going to go up.
You can talk about the salary cap. It doesn't bother me.
Well, I think that, you know, that's why certain players have signed PTOs and mm-hmm. haven't signed contracts. But Cody Franzen, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Cody Franzen. Richie mentioned, I mean, you know, he's a player that on Toronto was really at times their best all-around defenseman. I mean, on Toronto, I mean, sure, there's, you know, Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner there. You know, they're obviously the future on defense there. But I agree with Rich. I think when you look at some of the other contracts that were signed, talking Jeff Petrie or Andre Sequeira, you look at Cody Franzen and Tim Murray, I think, got a really good deal here. And the Buffalo Sabres guys, I mean, you look at their team, and I think we would probably all agree that if they do end up making the playoffs this year, it's probably going to be a lower seed. I think, mm-hmm. you know, because the Buffalo Sabres were so bad last year, to go into the playoffs, I mean, that would be a major accomplishment. But you look at what they've done here with their defense, and we know Zach Bogosian is part of that D group, and they traded Zadorov. But you look, and now you throw in Cody Franzen, and you know, you got Josh Georges there, who's obviously mm-hmm. the leader there. Now this is a respectable decor
for
the Buffalo Sabres. And you know, you up the middle, the trade to get, as I mentioned, Ryan O'Reilly,
sure.
Up the middle with Jack Eichel. And then, I mean, this is starting to look
Kane,
like
Bogosian.
A respect. Yeah, exactly. And then you throw in Evander Kane there, who's probably going to play on the top line. You've still got Tyler Ennis there. I mean, this is starting to look like a team that isn't, I would go as far as to say this: the moves the Buffalo Sabres have made, I think they've put themselves above that kind of lower tier of teams that are going to be in the Austin Matthews sweepstakes.
Oh,
so you're talking about the
for
New
sure.
Jersey Devils, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think what the Buffalo Sabres have done this offseason has been nothing short of incredible. And you got some youth there. You know, Sam Reinhart is going to play this yeah. year for Buffalo. I mean, this team is going in the right direction, and I like this signing a lot for Buffalo.
It also allows them to sort of ease Rasmus Ristolainen, and he doesn't have to play, you know, really difficult minutes against, you know, the top two forward lines.
Yeah, I mean, they have a hole on the left side of their defense there. That's an issue, but they're a much improved team and certainly a playoff contender.
Sure, but I mean, you go down your right side. The right side now is Bogosian, Franzen, Ristolainen.
You know, yep.
Better. It's a much better defense than what they were trotting out there last year. Or
I mean, by country mile. Yeah, country mile, Drew.
Well, I mean that's a, you know, you can be a playoff team with those three guys on your right side of your defense. Yeah.
They were too young last year. I think they acquired Carlo Koliakovo as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is now an NHL decor.
Yeah.
That's right. Last year it just wasn't, and that's why the Buffalo Sabres were the worst team in the NHL. I mean, they were just getting lit up night after night. They couldn't skate with teams, and I like what Tim Murray's done.
The Leafs, by the way, apparently offered Franz at 4.6 in the middle of last year on a fairly long-term deal, and he turned that down. I mean, how many times are they going to screw up the contract negotiations here?
You mean his agent?
Well, you think it's the agent. I mean, who else is it going to be?
Certainly he advises
the agent, so you can't just blame the agent, but there's something wrong there. Yeah. I mean, he continues to miss a lot of money. It's hard to miss money in this market.
They pay anybody.
You breathe, they pay you.
He's been up to the challenge, though.
Yeah.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Bill Hoppe is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Sabres signing of Franzen and their offseason in general. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an icy Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're
listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times-Herald. You can also see his work at BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Bill Hoppe. Bill, good afternoon, Eastern Time Zone. Good morning in the Central Time Zone, and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's the afternoon here. You're right.
There you go. I was able to get both of them in there at the same time. Bill, it's how was the summer? We're back to hockey season. Do you have a good couple months off in between?
The summer was good. You know, it was busy in the beginning with all the Eichel stuff and free agency, but it calmed down. I was able to enjoy a nice Buffalo summer, so thank you for asking.
There you go. That's good. Sabres made a bit of a splash into free agency this past week, getting Cody Franzen under contract. It's a two-year deal, $6.65 million, salary cap hit of $3.325. You know, sort of, what do you think Franzen's going to bring to the table for the Buffalo defense, and how does he fit in among the top six in the Sabres' back end?
I think he fits in well. He'll slide in as probably the third, fourth, or fifth defenseman. He'll play a lot in the power play. He'll probably play 18, 20 minutes a game, and he gives them an element they don't really have. They need offense. They need an offensive defenseman, and Zach Bogosian, as you know, kind of has the element and kind of doesn't. But I think Cody Franzen is a true power play 3-point defenseman, and there aren't a lot of those in the league. And the Sabres for a while said they wanted a left-handed defenseman to fill out their ranks, but I think they realized that Cody Franzen was sitting on the market, and he might be right-handed, but might as well just get the best guy that's out there.
Bill, it's obviously going to be a lot about Jack Eichel this year being drafted second overall. And with the Buffalo Sabres getting that second overall pick, and you know, everybody was hoping that it would be Connor McDavid, but I think you'd agree that Jack Eichel was a pretty good consolation prize. But I know you've written about this for the Times-Herald and for Buffalo Hockey Beat, but are heading into training camp starting this coming week, is it safe to say that they have him penciled in as that second-line center, or is that still something that has yet to be determined and they're going to wait to see how he does in training camp and then early in the preseason?
I think it's yet to be determined. I think if you had to peg him somewhere right now, he'd be probably their third center. Ryan O'Reilly is number one. I think they want to ease him in, and that's one of the reasons they got Ryan O'Reilly. They want Ryan O'Reilly, of course, because they want to have a number one center, but they also wanted to take the pressure off Jack Eichel. So I think early in the preseason, maybe he's the third guy. Maybe he plays 13 to 15 minutes, and you kind of see how it progresses from there. But at some point this season, or early this season, or later in the season, or whenever, he'll probably be the number one or two center, I would think. But for the time being, I think they're just going to ease him in.
I saw that you were writing about that he's living with Matt Molson, so I guess that was probably by design, because there's a good chance that he's going to play with Matt Molson on that second line, right?
They could very well be line mates, and I think it's a good setup for him. Matt Molson's a really respected teammate. He's been through a lot in his career, and I think he could offer a lot. And yeah, they could be line mates. And Matt Molson actually lived with John Tavares in 2009-2010, and that ended up working out pretty well for those two. So maybe there's more to it, too.
Bill, we talked about, you know, Cody Franzen and solidifying the right side there, but you said playing about 18 to 20 minutes. How are the Sabres going to deal with the left side? Seems a little bit weak at the moment.
They have, I'm trying to go through my head here, they have Carlo Koliakovo, Mike Weber, I'm forgetting someone else. And I think that's why...
Josh Georges.
I think that's why... Yeah, Josh Georges was coming off knee surgery, so... I think that's why one of the reasons they wanted balance, but they also wanted they just wanted a stronger lefty, I think. But I think they're happy with Franz, and I think Mark Pesek, who's going to be a regular with the Sabres this year, he played the left side in Rochester last year, I believe, so he can slide over there. So I think they do have some options.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking about the Buffalo Sabres. Our guest is Bill Hoppe of the Times Herald and of BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Bill, we got to ask another Sabres forward, Sam Reinhart. What's the expectation for him entering into this season on this young team with the Sabres?
Publicly, they'll tell you that they expect him to make the team and be a contributor and all that stuff. But I think maybe he winds up in Rochester to begin the season. Maybe he doesn't stay there. But I think based on where he was a year ago, it's hard for me to believe that he could be a big NHL contributor. Even a year later, he had a very good World Junior, as you know. He was a star, won gold, very good junior season, did well in a brief run in Rochester at the end of the season. But from where he was 11 months ago to being a 15-20-minute NHL center, that maybe the second center, third center, I don't know if he can do that right away. So maybe he winds up in Rochester until for the first couple months and has a point a game, and then they feel he's ready. But at some point this season, I think he'll be up.
Now, Bill, we're 7 minutes into the interview here, and we still haven't even asked you about Evander Kane. I don't know how that is, but Drew was mentioning expectations, and a lot of Winnipeg Jets fans are salivating at the chance of seeing Evander Kane in a Buffalo Sabres jersey in January when they come and play the MTS Center. But I guess I'm not going to ask you about the billboard. But Evander Kane, how has he been fitting into the city of Buffalo? And I guess what are they expecting out of Evander Kane? Obviously, after he was traded, he wasn't able to play at all last year.
Well, I don't know if he's been here that much. He's been here periodically. He seems to be fitting in. I mean, people like him here. They got a 30-goal guy who's young, who was a top draft pick, whatever, 5-6 years ago. So, I mean, anytime a guy like that comes to town, people are going to be excited. And the expectation is that he is going to be a 30-goal scorer, that they went out and got one of the game's bright young wingers, and that he's going to be that guy they expect him to be, 30 to 35 goals every year. But having said that, I think he's only scored 30 goals once, and he comes with some baggage. So, I mean, if he struggles early, who knows what could happen.
Bill, are the Sabres, there has to be some concern just about chemistry because you're putting so many new guys in the room together. Is there anything they have planned for training camp to try and build that quickly?
I don't know about any team-building exercises or anything like that, but you bring up a good point, and that's one of the reasons I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year, one of many. But they just so many new guys, and there's a new coach, new coaching staff, and they've never been together. So, I mean, that means something, and it might take them months to get going.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're talking about the Buffalo Sabres with guest Bill Hoppe. Bill, wanted to ask you about Tyler Ennis. He had a good year last year on obviously a down season for the Sabres. What are expectations now for Tyler Ennis now that he's being surrounded by more talent and that the team itself is going to be better than they were last season?
I think the expectation is he's going to go to the next level, that he's going to hit 30 goals and have 60, 70 points. And honestly, I think he can do it. I'm biased because I see him all the time and stuff. I think he's one of the most exciting players in the league. I think if he played in Toronto or Montreal or somewhere else, if people would just be talking about him constantly. He's that good. He definitely has potential to score 30, 35 goals, have 70, 75 points. And if he's playing with Jack Eichel or Ryan O'Reilly or whoever, I think it's a possibility that he could do something this year.
Now, Bill, you mentioned that you probably won't be picking the Buffalo Sabres to make the playoffs this year, which obviously means we can't call you Homer. but I agree with you. I think that there are a lot of young players, and it will be tough to get everybody on the same page right out of the bat off the hop. But when you look at Dan Bylsma, him coming in as the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, when he looks at all the young talent that he has on this roster, is he already clearly defining, I guess, what his expectations and the style that he wants to bring to Buffalo?
I think he is. I think he wants them to play quick, aggressive. I think what you saw in Pittsburgh is what you'll probably see in Buffalo. He's just that same that same sort of style. And I, honestly, I think they have the personnel to do it. It might not be pretty early, but I really think what he wants to execute, they'll be able to do because they've gone out and gotten top-tier talent.
Now, you look at the between the pipes there and Marc-Andre Fleury, of course, Bill, for the most part, I think during Bylsma's tenure, provided solid goaltending in the regular season. In the playoffs, he was great at times and he struggled, but Robin Leonard needs to be that guy for them, and personally, I think he's got the talent, just got to get his head on straight and get some consistency. Does the team have very high expectations for this guy? Because they paid a high price for him.
Yeah, they certainly did. They gave up a first-rounder and a very deep draft for him. And the expectation is that he'll be a number one. He'll play 50, whatever, 60 games and be a top NHL number one goalie. And, I mean, you've certainly seen potential from him, but he's never really done it over a full season. And it's goaltending is a big question mark for the Sabres. They have him, and they have Chad Johnson, who was with the Bruins and Islanders, and he's been around a little bit. And he's okay, but he's kind of just a backup. So as bad as the Sabres were the last couple of years, they had great goaltending. People almost lose sight of that. They had Ryan Miller playing very well. They had Jonas Enroth, Michael Neuberth, even Anders Lindblom played really well. And if the goaltending goes south, they could be bad again this year.
The NHL is better when the Buffalo Sabres are a good team, at least in my mind, and it looks like they're trending upward again after a couple of years of a downward trajectory. Bill, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the start of training camp and enjoy the start of the season before things get underway about a month from now.
All right, thank you, guys.
Take care, Bill. Thanks very much. As we go to break, Puck Talks Live. It's Tuesday. Richard Pollock is going to be one of the panelists. We'll do caller number three right now. Caller number three to 780-1290. We'll give you two tickets to Puck Talks Live this coming Tuesday here in Winnipeg. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Congratulations to Jay Gagnon. He wins two tickets to Puck Talks Live coming up this coming Tuesday here in Winnipeg. Richard Pollock going to be one of the panelists. We'll be in touch with Jay accordingly. He gets his two tickets. In case you still want to buy tickets, they're available, pucktalkslive.com. If you use, there's a number of different discount codes floating around there.
Excited to see Richie at Puck Talks Live. You know, there's going to be some other local celebrities from the station, Huss, whoever that other guy that Huss does his show with.
The Huss and Blank show. I don't know what his name is.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Philanthropy is a key pillar in a strong community. That's why the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba is proud to support Art City Incorporated and their initiative to engage marginalized youth in art workshops that foster creativity and empowerment through the art of giving. For more information about the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba or to purchase tickets to their 40th anniversary luncheon featuring a keynote address from Rick Frost, CEO of the Winnipeg Foundation, on the topic of sustaining our culture of generosity, visit jewishfoundation.org or call 204-477-7520.
NHL News and Notes.
Some news and notes from around the NHL this Saturday morning. We start with a trade that was a long time coming, that being the Chicago Blackhawks trading of Chris Versteeg along with Joachim Nordstrom and a 2017 third-round pick to the Carolina Hurricanes. We talked about them earlier in the show. Going to Chicago is prospect defenseman Dennis Robertson, Jake Massey, and a 2017 fifth-rounder. How'd the Hurricanes do? We know that why the Blackhawks made this trade. It was a salary dump in order for them to sign Marcus Kruger, which they then did later on yesterday, signing RFA Marcus Kruger to a one-year, $1.5 million contract. Do you like the fit of Versteeg in Carolina? And what do you think of the $1.5 million that Marcus Kruger got from the Chicago Blackhawks?
Well, Richie, I'm a little bit surprised that Marcus Kruger only got a one-year deal, because he's been a big part of the last two cup-winning teams for Chicago, 2013-2015. But, I mean, they're obviously still in a cap crunch. I mean, it's amazing that after this trade, they're still going to have to deal with the lack of a lot of remaining salary cap room, right? And that's, again, because the salary cap only went up to $71 million. But look at Drew. I think, you know, for the Carolina Hurricanes, I think Ron Francis did a really good job here. Chris Versteeg and Joachim Nordstrom were guys that they were in and out of the lineup for the Chicago Blackhawks last year just because they're such a deep team. Versteeg and Bickle were two guys that they were trying to move, and they were successful in moving Versteeg, but they were also two guys, Richie, that were in and out of the lineup mm-hmm. during the playoffs mm-hmm. Because they had other players there that they wanted to use. Antoine Vermette and obviously Tara Vinen was really good in the playoffs for them. But for Carolina, I mean, they get players now that they can use in their lineup. You know, Carolina has struggled with depth, especially in their bottom six. And, you know, even though Eric Staal and Jeff Skinner and Elias Lindholm, I mean, these guys are good players. You know, they need some supporting cast. So for Chris Versteeg and Joachim Nordstrom, it's nice for them. You know, they'll get a better opportunity to play more meaningful minutes, Richie, in Carolina as opposed to Chicago, especially in, you know, you've brought over, you know, Victor Tikhonov and Panarin. I mean, these guys are just squeezing guys like Chris Versteeg out there. So, and I mean, for Marcus Kruger, it's nice. He finally gets a contract. I mean, he waited around all summer. He's the fourth line center for the cup winning team, and they wanted to sign him, but they just couldn't find the money. So it's nice for Kruger to finally get the deal done.
Yeah, he's a valuable player for them. He does a lot of the small things, as you mentioned, that contribute to a winning squad. So you need to get him signed. In terms of the trade, Carolina just wants bodies that can play in the National Hockey League because mm-hmm. people paid NHL prices last year here to see their AHL team come through town. And it's still a salary dump, and you're only eating Versteeg half. Versteeg's getting paid 2.2 as a cap hit because Florida's eating some of his money anyways. So in reality, you're taking 1 year of 2.2 for Versteeg so to get an NHL body, plus you're taking Nordstrom, and you get a third-round pick when you're trading away a fifth-round pick and two sixth-round draft picks that either are unsigned or have been out of the draft for about, well, Robertson's was drafted about 2010, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, 2011 he was drafted by the Leafs sixth-rounder, and Jake Massey is a sixth-rounder the Canes just drafted, and he's unsigned. So in reality, you're moving up in the draft, and you're taking on players that can fill your roster. I mean, in reality, it's an inconsequential trade. But it's better than seeing some of the guys Carolina was throwing out there. Yeah. Chris Versteeg, is a little bit of a waste of talent. I just think he could have been a more impactful player than he's become.
But he's still a guy that, you know, scored 20 goals in the NHL.
Yeah.
He had 14, I think, last year. And for Carolina, I mean, he immediately, at the very least, he's a third-line winger and might even get a chance to play on the second line. On the wing there. I don't think we'd expect him to be on the first line. But so, I mean, Carolina improves their depth. But yeah, Richie, I mean, this is clearly a move that was made. It wasn't a coincidence that they signed Marcus Kruger right after they made the trade. I mean, they were trying to move Brian Bickle at the draft. And he makes more money than Chris Versteeg does. And so they were able to make this move. They found a partner to make the trade. And so it's a trade that benefits both teams.
Yeah, I mean, don't be surprised if Versteeg does get, you know, he had 54 points a number of years ago or a few years ago with the Florida Panthers. And I mean, that was an inconsequential Panthers team. And he's going to an inconsequential Hurricanes team. But he's going to get some points. And they're just going to be inconsequential points. I mean,
he's just a guy. I mean, he's not a great skater. And Chris Versteeg is, you know, when you're not a great skater and you're under 6 feet, it's tough to make it. But he's smart enough and he's got good enough hands to me have been a player that was more valuable to good teams.
Sure.
And just hasn't really stayed around. You know, I mean, you're talking about now Chicago to Toronto to Philly to Florida to Chicago now to Carolina. I mean, that's a lot of moving around for a 29-year-old guy.
With his
skill level.
Yeah, you would think he's older at this point in time.
He's certainly an NHL player, guys.
Yeah.
I just think that he could have carved out a better career for himself with the talent level he has.
What do you think about Kruger only taking the one-year deal and a million and a half? This is a guy who could have taken them to arbitration, probably would have resulted in a higher award from an arbitrator, but it also would have likely ended with him being traded out of Chicago due to the cap ramifications.
Well, you can't give him any. You got to give him credit. I mean, the guy wants to win. You know, if we're going to criticize guys for just taking the money, I don't think we really do that. We just acknowledge that it's the case. This is a guy that just wants to win, clearly. So give him credit for that. You know, I mean, the difference here is, like, he wants to win. He knows what his goal is. We talked about Cody Franzen earlier. Like, Cody Franzen passes up arbitration, then gets a worse deal, and then pass up another deal and then gets to where, you know what I mean? And so the vision there doesn't seem like it was, he didn't realize on the vision that he had or him and his agent had. In this case, clearly it's short term. I want to win. I'll deal with the stuff later. And this is what they want. I mean, sure, would he want a little bit more? Yeah, of course. But I'm not going to criticize the guy for trying to win.
Yeah, Marcus Kruger is a very effective player. You ask anybody in that Chicago Blackhawks dressing room, you'll hear that he was a big part of the team. This isn't just a player that, you know, has a small role on the team. I mean, this guy is a very good two-way forward. And, you know, if he's a UFA, Drew, he might get more money. And I'd have to think that Marcus Kruger probably wanted 2-3, maybe even a 4-year deal at his age. But as Richie said, you're talking about the Stanley Cup, defending Stanley Cup champions. And he knows his role on the team, and he's comfortable with the players on the team, the coaching staff, the general managers, all of that. So I think he's probably pretty happy just to have his name on a contract right now.
And you can probably bet that arbitration next year will be a shoo-in for him. I mean, I think this is a one-year kind of, let's give you a favor and let's make sure we give another run. This is not a favor that will be ongoing for years and years.
Sure. David Savard in Columbus, defenseman, signs a 5-year contract extension worth $21.25 million. It's a salary cap hit of $4.25 million per season. David Savard's probably not a household name. Probably a lot of, you know, casual fans might not know who he is. Uh-huh. But he gets a pretty significant contract from the Blue Jackets.
He's an underrated defenseman.
Well, you know, the thing about David Savard is he's smart and he can move the puck. And he's a right side guy. If you're a right side guy, you're smart and you can move the puck. You can do pretty well for yourself. And I like his game. I mean, is he going to be a dominant shutdown guy? No. But he's going to help your transition game. He's going to have the stability of a bunch of big forwards kind of helping him out along the boards. I like David Savard's game. I liked him since I saw him play in junior, and I'm happy that a guy's navigated his way. You know, he was drafted in the 4th round, guys, on a team, if I recall correctly, overshadowed by Brandon Gormley, who ironically was also, well, there's a transaction involving him this week,
which we'll get to next.
He was, to me, the better player on that squad. I thought he was a more effective player, and I'm not shocked to see him kind of having risen above Gormley this time to be the better player. But this contract, you know, you might sound like, wow, that's a lot. And hey, they're probably overpaying him initially, but if he comes and he puts up even more points and really establishes himself there, there's going to be some nice value there on this team. And one thing about Columbus is if you're good and you're loyal, they'll pay you.
Yeah. Decent offensive numbers last year.
He's good offensively, Drew. Very smart.
11 goals, 25 assists, 36 points in 82 games.
Savard's a good defenseman. I think you also have to factor in here, guys, with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And we talked to Aaron Portsline about this last time we had him on the show. Ryan Murray's health has been a major concern for them, and he just hasn't been able to play a lot of hockey for them. Mm-hmm. They drafted this guy 2nd overall in 2012, the same year Jacob Trouba was drafted. And you know, he was kind of anointed right then as their future number one defenseman. And you know, I think we'd all agree that they would have liked to have seen more of him over the years. But I think because of those injury concerns, I think that's maybe why David Savard got a few more years. Not to say that David Savard doesn't deserve it, Richie, to get a 5-year contract. But I think, you know, you look at the defense, and it's not the strength of the team. I mean, the strength of the team, in my opinion, is in goal and on forward, especially with a lot of the younger talent they have up front with, you know, a guy like Wenberg and other players. Ryan Johansson's still young. But to me, you know, David Savard, along with, you know, Jack Johnson, Fedor Tuit, I mean, They needed to lock him up, I think. So, yeah, a very solid defenseman, underrated, and I think, you know, more people are going to be watching Columbus this year. With last year and all the injuries that they had, I think that was a lost season for Columbus. But now with Brandon Saad and, you know, I like the Gregory Campbell signing as a 4th-line center, I think Columbus is they're certainly going to be a contender to make the playoffs this year. I don't know. Their defense is not as strong as other teams, Richie, but
it isn't.
It's a better team, and just has to be, Drew, because they're not going to have as many injuries. They just can't. I mean, last year was, I think they set a record.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, he fits in size-wise, too, to what they're trying to do, 6'2", 220 pounds. I mean, sometimes defensively he can improve a little bit there. That's why I talk about, you know, being insulated by the forwards, big forwards, pretty some good two-way forwards on that team. But another thing, as you mentioned, Ryan Murray, well, I mean, it's very possible Jarmo Kekalainen and the brass there believes that David Savard and Ryan Murray may be a combination moving forward, right and left side guys, young guys who could develop together and can complement each other, because Murray's a two-way guy and could certainly play the left side of with a guy like Savard, who's a little more of an offensive defenseman.
You mentioned Brandon Gormley earlier when we were talking about David Savard. The Avalanche acquired defenseman Brandon Gormley from the Phoenix Coyotes in exchange the Arizona Coyotes in exchange for defenseman Stephen Elliott. We can call him the Las Vegas Coyotes for all I really care. It doesn't really matter. The Coyotes, Stephen Elliott was an RFA. The Coyotes have reportedly signed him to a one-year two-way contract after acquiring him from Colorado. You know, anything of significance? Any of these players going to be make an impact here?
Well, I mean, Brandon Gormley, Drew, was a top draft pick of the Phoenix Coyotes.
He was a first-rounder.
Before it was the Arizona Coyotes. And yeah, his first-rounder, I played, believe, on junior with David Savard, was more heralded than David Savard. To me, Brandon Gormley has, when you play in this day and age, you have to, your skating has to be up to par in the most cases, and his skating is a little bit below par. He's not afraid to be a physical guy, and he has some... he can put up some points, but I haven't seen him enough recently to speak to kind of the way he sees the game particularly. But I do know that having seen him play before, his skating is not necessarily been up to par, and I think that's held him back.
Yeah, and I'd probably say that I like Brandon Gormley as a player a little bit better than Stephen Elliott, but they're similar age, and both players that have haven't had full seasons in the NHL. It's kind of been half seasons or less than half seasons and haven't fully realized their potential yet. And as we know, defensemen take a little bit more time to mature and all that. So I think you're seeing two teams make a trade where they can kind of see the upside in each player.
That's fair.
And the Colorado Avalanche, I think, you know, there's a chance that he plays more significant minutes than he would in Arizona, and that's just because of a guy named Oliver Ekman-Larsson there. But I think that with Colorado, I think, you know, I like Francois Beauchemin. Francois Beauchemin's a little bit older. He was very effective for the Anaheim Ducks last year. And I know Brad Stewart has slowed down a little bit, but, you know, if they're healthy, Tyson Barrie and Eric Johnson are healthy, and you know, you throw in Nikita Zadorov, who they acquired in the Ryan O'Reilly trade. This Colorado Avalanche defense is a lot more mobile, Richie, than it was a year ago.
Well, because the guys you mentioned, I mean, Barrie and Johnson can move the puck. Barrie is better at moving the puck than Johnson is. And Beauchemin helps Zadorov as a talented young player. And then you add Gormley to the left side, which is weaker than the right, but improving. And as he mentions, the veterans that they've added. I can't speak to Stephen Elliott. I haven't seen him play. But I would assume that, as you mentioned, that both teams see kind of the upside and see that there's some ability here to take a shot. But
change in location.
Don't love either player. Yeah. If you love either player, if you have young defensemen you like, you're not trading them.
Yeah, change in location maybe to see if you can get the lightning in a bottle with each player. One final one, Calgary Flames sign RFA Michael Furland to a two-year $1.65 million extension.
Yeah, he's a former Wheat King. You know, it's nice to see him get the contract. And on a young team, he had his best year in the NHL last year. And you know, he was a player who had to work his way into the NHL. It's always good to see it's always good to see those Brandon Wheat Kings doing well. Mark Stone is another guy that had a great year for the Ottawa Senators. I could go on and on. Calvert.
Michael Furlan's changed his game a little bit, but boy, he is almost an impossible guy to play against when he's going. Like, he's so physical and completely unwilling to back down from anybody. So, I mean, I think he adds a nice different element to the Calgary Flames than some of the top-end young guys that they have are just going to be focusing on scoring. And you need those complementary players. You need those guys to protect the top-end guys. So good for him. And Brad Treliving just gets stuff done, eh? I got to think. He trades for Dougie Hamilton. He signs Mark Giordano. He signs Furlan. That's the thing I like about Brad Treliving.
Yeah, and speaking of, sorry.
Just gets it done.
Yeah, speaking of the Wheat Kings, the CHL preseason rankings came out. Wheat Kings number one in the nation.
Well, they're very well regarded coming into the season. We know that. Last year we had a number of guests on the show, Bruce Lubke amongst them, that said, you know, this is a team that's a year ahead of schedule, and they went to the WHL final.
Yeah, they went to the WHL finals last year. Yeah, they are a year ahead of schedule because they drafted first overall a couple years ago. They got some trades and everything else. Interesting, Ryan Pilon, Islanders draft pick, actually left the Wheat Kings saying he's lost his passion to play hockey.
You know, it's actually pretty funny. At the draft, he was with his family. We were in the elevator leaving the arena.
This is Ryan Pilon?
This is Ryan Pilon with his family. As you mentioned, he played for the Brandon Wheat Kings this past year, and he's a big guy. Really good hockey player, and you know, it was surprising to hear that. But you know, we wish him the best in everything that he does.
Yeah, interesting that a guy who just got drafted, you know, in the fifth round, 147th overall. Yeah.
He went later than many predicted. At times, he was projected to go in the second round. But, I mean, obviously, you know, things change. And
yeah, if he doesn't have his passion, he doesn't have his
passion. I'll never lose the passion for Legal Curve, though. Don't worry about that, Drew.
Sometimes we wish you would. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Montreal Canadiens, some news coming out of their training camp and prospects, etc. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Here's Gallagher. Shoots. Paul was there. Rebound. Scores. It's over.
Pass turns it over to Patanis. He dropped it down to Gallagher. Rebound. And Galchenyuk, the wheel and fire. That's a tough shot to make. Galchenyuk does it beautifully.
Alex Galchenyuk scoring for the Montreal Canadiens last season. Some news out of the Canadiens camp as they enter into training camp that is worth discussing. First of all, Alex Galchenyuk, formerly first-round pick of the Canadiens, he's going to finally move to center after playing the first number of seasons in the NHL on the wing. Habs have been in searching for sort of a top-line center. They've had Thomas Plekanec in that role as of late, perhaps a little bit miscast as a top-line center. Alex Galchenyuk now, 3 years into his NHL career, gets the chance to be that top-line center for the Habs. Think that's going to work out?
Well, we know, Richie, that Alex Galchenyuk has been pretty vocal about wanting to be at the center position. And, you know, just on Thomas Plekanec for a second, Thomas Plekanec is, I think, an underrated two-way forward. I think if you watch Thomas Plekanec play, you know, he's one of those players that sometimes he's quiet on the ice, but very smart player, very skilled. But to your point, though, Drew,
we'll talk about Plekanec in a couple minutes.
I know, I think to your point, though, I do think Plekanec has been a little bit miscast. He's a little smaller too. I think the Montreal Canadiens, as Richie mentioned, you know, with the potential maybe of Montreal going after a guy like Eric Staal if he's available to kind of make this team bigger. I mean, this is what they've needed, and Galchenyuk is bigger, but this team still. I mean, it wasn't Galchenyuk and Plekanec and Pacioretty that were the problem, Rich. It was getting secondary scoring, and that's what's been the Achilles heel of this team. I mean, they've been too dependent on Carey Price, especially last year. The advanced stats crowd, you know, turned out to be right with Montreal not doing as well as they wanted to in the playoffs. But, no, I think Galchenyuk is a very good player. I've always been a big Galchenyuk fan, Drew. This guy's got loads of skill. And I think, you know, at times last year, he struggled with consistency and all of that. And I don't think we've seen the best of Galchenyuk. Like, I think Galchenyuk is like a 70 or 80-point guy. I don't think we've even seen close to as good as what he has to offer.
I mean, he got a lot stronger the past 2 years, 3 years. Maybe that's going to help him up the middle. I think it's a worthy shot. I mean, it's so hard to find good NHL centers. Especially with the skill level and the wrist shot and the competitiveness of a guy like Alex Galchenyuk. So why not try? But you have to try it for 40 games, 25, 30, 40 games. You can't try it for 5 or 10. Got to give him a fair shot. That's part of development in the National Hockey League level, even when you're a team like Montreal who has aspirations of winning a cup and going far in the playoffs. Because I think it's worth it to give him that shot. I think this is a logical next step in his career. You ease him in on the wing. It's happened with many other players before, and you move him over to the center, which is his natural position. Especially because you seem to have a lot of trouble finding centers that are above 5'7", 5'8". You know, Plekanec, Darnay, all that stuff. So,
leading to Thomas Plekanec, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. And he was speaking earlier, you know, this week, is probably leading up to training camp, as we've been seeing throughout all the 30 NHL cities. Mm-hmm. He says no contract talks have taken place between his management or his representatives and the Canadiens' management. Here's the quote: "I'm not going to ask them if they want me," Plekanec said jokingly. "If they want me, they would call, I guess. Should I call and ask, do you want me here? I have a phone number. I think it's up to general manager Marc Bergevin if he wants me. I'm sure he'll call the agent and start talking." He's got $5 million left on what was a six-year, $30 million contract that began in 2010.
Well, that's when you get to, we talked about at the top of the show 7 hours ago. It's our first three-hour show in a while. I'm having a great time as usual, though. I do six-hour shows. Not if anybody listen. But the joke side, we talked about, you know, is it a distraction, right? And sometimes you get a little view into the locker room, into a guy's psyche, and Thomas Plekanec's being very honest with you there. And I think Plekanec feels disrespected. I'm not sure that's something that Ladd and Byfuglien feel. But do you guys know what I mean here? Is that he says, you know, well, my, you know, seems kind of angry about it. Well, is that a distraction? Is he emotionally affected by it? If he is, does he take that into the locker room? Does that affect his game? Does that affect the game of others? So, I mean, to me, it seems like he feels disrespected, and he probably wants to get paid to a level that doesn't make him underrated anymore, is he? But one of the reasons he's underrated is because he gets paid what he does. So, sure. You know, it's a chicken or the egg.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised to hear those comments, Drew. And Plekanec, you know, again, had a great regular season and struggled in the playoffs for the Montreal Canadiens. And coming off that six-year contract, as you mentioned, I don't know what the Montreal Canadiens kind of have in store or if they factor Thomas Plekanec into the future. To me, you know, to hear that they haven't been talking is somewhat surprising. And, you know, at 32 years old, is this a player that they want to sign?
Yeah, 33 in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, is that a player they want to sign to a 4 or 5 year deal? I mean, I would think, Richie, at the very least, he's looking probably for a 3 year deal.
3 to 4, I'd say.
3 or 4.
And looks for 4 to 5, probably gets 3 or 4.
Yeah, and do they want to pay him? And they're going to have to pay him. I mean, $5 million, $6 million for a guy like Plekanec? I mean, good hockey player, good two way player. And he has serious assignments. He's given serious assignments, Montreal Canadiens. I mean, up the middle. I mean, this is a guy that has been a big part of this team, and I don't know if they want to sign him to this contract. So, it's a little bit troubling if you're Thomas Plekanec and if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, because even though Alex Galchenyuk is moving to the center, I mean, you know, what's the plan here? Moving forward with him, are they going to trade him? Are they going to wait till later in the season to sign him? Are they just going to let him go? I don't think they want to let him go.
I know you went to the conference final last year, and Carey Price's injury affected how you played against the New York Rangers, clearly, and you're eliminated fairly easily. But you're not winning the Cup with Lars Eller, Thomas Plekanec, and David Desharnais as your top three centers. You're just not. You're not going to win the Cup with that. So if Galchenyuk is, to me, a logical move, where does Plekanec fit in there? I mean, he's got to be a 2 or 3. He's not a number one center in the National Hockey League. We know that. Mm-hmm. And so does he slot in for them? Do they envision him as a 2 or 3 down the road here? We know he's been at least a 2 for a while. He's been a 2 for a while, maybe playing in an elevated role. But the question then is, do you see him as a 2 or 3? And then is your pay going to be commensurate with your expectation for him? And if not, then you have to move him. Again, in this day and age, you can't just let these guys go. So we'll see.
Last one, the Canadiens didn't have a captain last season. Instead, they had 4 alternate captains, Max Pacioretty, P.K. Subban, the aforementioned Thomas Plekanec, and Andrei Markov. Marc Bergevin announces that they will have a captain in place by the end of training camp. Who's going to be?
Well, I mean, they did the whole Carey Price thing, so that's kind of, you know, like the Luongo thing is an example of kind of, I think Price is a real leader there, so that's not going to be who it is.
Sure.
To me, Subban is the logical one, and then everybody else, Subban would be the logical one, and Gallagher would be number 2. That's how I see it personally. And I say that because Subban can affect a game more than Gallagher can, and I like Brandon Gallagher's game, and he's rugged, and he can cause trouble. But he's not a game breaker. P.K. Subban is a game breaker. People may not like him. I like him. And he's a game breaker. So it's one of those two guys. Galchenyuk at this stage is not ready for that. Age or not, just the role and the position he's taken and trying to develop himself in the middle. So
not Pacioretty?
I don't think Pacioretty. I don't know if Pacioretty emotionally is a good captain choice. I think he gets a little bit too emotional. I like his game. I've always have liked this game. He's on a terrific value contract right now. He's a great player, good skater, terrific wrist shot, probably top 10 in the game. But I just don't think that's for him. I think he's better off with an A. I would personally give it to P.K. Subban.
I think it's got to be, I agree with Richie, I think it's got to be P.K. or Gallagher. I mean, both of those players are fantastic hockey players. And I think when you're talking about P.K. Subban, I agree with Rich. I think, you know, he's the MVP of the team. Aside from Carey Price, you've got a couple of MVPs on this team. And when you're talking about Gallagher, I mean, he kind of embodies the heart and soul. Kind of reminds me of when Mike Keane, if you remember, was the captain of the Montreal Canadiens. So, I mean, a lot of these choices are good. I mean, even if you went with Max Pacioretty or Markov, I mean, you can't go wrong with any of these choices. But, you know, to answer the question, if I'm making the decision, it's probably Subban or Gallagher.
Why doesn't Alex Semin get any consideration?
It must have just been overlooked in the article.
That's weird.
Yeah. Let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, rapid fire, cheers and jeers to wrap up this Saturday edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You're on the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, one final segment on this Saturday morning. The Jays following us. The Jays, they're in the New York doubleheader today. You can catch it all here on TSN 1290. And, of course, we have Blue Bomber game day as well. So just keep it locked here. TSN 1290 is for your radio home for sports here in Winnipeg.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Speaking to ESPN.com, Steven Stamkos said the following about Connor McDavid. This guy is a special kid. I think he's better than me right now. I wouldn't have a second thought on saying that. Do you think that Steven Stamkos truly believes that Connor McDavid is the better player right now?
Sure, why not? I mean, Connor McDavid is going to be so much fun to watch this year. I mean, the fact that Steven Stamkos is saying that about Connor McDavid shows you how special of a talent he is. And obviously, he hasn't played an NHL game yet. He's only played one Young Stars Classic game. But, I mean, we all know that he is going to light it up in the NHL this year. So, you know, whether or not he truly believes it, I mean, he's saying it. And that shows you how excited even Steven Stamkos is about the potential of Connor McDavid.
And do I think he's better than Steven Stamkos right now? No. From all accounts, I've seen McDavid play very few times, and I can't personally say it, but I mean, everybody says he's going to be incredible, and that, and people that I respect say that, so I think he will be great. I think he will be great off the hop. But is he better than Steven Stamkos today, right now? No. Steven Stamkos knows the defenseman in the game. He knows himself. He knows where to go to get into the best positions, and he's played center, and he's played away. No. But probably pretty shortly, maybe within 2 years.
I should mention that Rapid Fire is brought to you by our friends at Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to shoes to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. Big tent sale going on at the Royal Sports location on Pembina today for all your back-to-school needs. Check them out, Royal Sports on Pembina Highway and online at royalsports.me. Continuing with Rapid Fire, an interview with NHL.com. Evgeny Malkin said the following about new Penguins acquisition Phil Kessel. I know Kessel as a sniper. He likes to score goals. He's flying every game. I think if he plays with Sidney Crosby, he can score 50 goals at least. He has everything. What is the realistic goal total for Phil Kessel to target in his first season in Pittsburgh?
By the way, if you total like all the goals that all the players talk about scoring in the preseason, it would eclipse last year's goal total by like 100%. Realistically, I mean, 40 is realistic. For sure. I mean, because if you look at Phil Kessel's career, now he's going to have an opportunity to play in Toronto in all the big minutes, and maybe he doesn't get as many minutes in Pittsburgh. We don't know yet. Playing with Crosby, he'll have a lot of opportunities, but he was scoring 25-30 goals. He scored 37 goals with the Leafs twice. Last year had a bit of a down year and percentage-wise, you know, shooting percentage-wise. But at the end of the day, I mean, Crosby's better than
Tyler Bozak by miles. So I think 40 is a very realistic target for him.
Yeah, at least 30. And if you're a 25-goal scorer last year and you had one of your worst years in recent memory, 40 goals, Richie, is certainly realistic. And, yeah, you know, I echo what Richie said. Sidney Crosby's still one of the best centers in the National Hockey League. And when you're playing with Sid the Kid, you know, get yourself in the right position and, you know, you'll score a lot of goals.
And if him and Sid don't work, then he'll probably score 40 with Malkin.
It's a good problem to have for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Later today, along with fellow Swedish player Borre Salming, former Toronto Maple Leafs captain Mats Sundin will have a statue unveiled in his likeness on the Leafs legend row. His bronze likeness will be placed alongside other Leafs legends like Ted Kennedy, Daryl Sittler, and Johnny Bower. Sil Apps and George Armstrong will be receiving their statues later this year in November. Is Mats Sundin the best Leafs player from our generation, let's say 1982 onwards?
When is Phil Kessel getting his statue?
He's actually been bronze next to the hot dog cart next to the ACC.
Yeah, Matt's, that's great to hear. Mats Sundin
that he's getting that he's getting bronze next to a hot dog cart.
Did you say statue, by the way, or did you say statute?
I said statue, I believe.
Okay.
But I may have said statute, but that's not a word.
Okay. Statute. Like statute of law?
Yeah, no, that's a word.
I think, it's great to hear from Mats Sundin, and absolutely, he's up there with some of the best players in that era, Drew, the late 90s. Early 2000s.
Who else was better than him? Cujo? It's Mats.
Well, I'm talking about just in general, speaking.
Drew's talking Leafs.
I was asking, is he the best Leafs player from 1982 to today? Is he the best of this last 30-some-odd years?
It's him and Ty Domi, really, for me. No, of course he is.
Gilmore, maybe over a short period of time, was competing with him, and then you have Wendell Clark Love and all that stuff.
But Gilmore didn't play as many years in Toronto.
I think it's 100%.
It's not even close. Yeah. For me.
Last one. According to CSNNewEngland.com, all three of the Boston Bruins' 2015 first-round picks failed the team's conditioning test. The test consists of a series of back-and-forth 300-meter sprints with 3 minutes of rest in between each run, and all of them must be completed in under 1 minute's time. Bruins GM Don Sweeney didn't seem bothered by the results, saying that the three were running on a, quote, wet, slippery turf surface. What's more concerning to you, that the players failed the test or that the Bruins made them run the test on a, quote, wet, slippery surface?
Probably that they let them run on a wet, slippery surface. That's an insurance nightmare, guys. It's pretty funny, though, that they all failed the test. I expected better out of Jake DeBrusk.
Richie?
Well, I mean, people thought that they were poor picks. I can't speak to it. I haven't seen any of these guys play, but that probably wouldn't inspire much confidence after they were picks that were criticized, and then these guys can't even finish the conditioning test. But, Drew, good point by you to have these guys running in the middle of wet conditions.
Yeah.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Is he cheer or jeer?
I always cheer.
Yes, I know.
I never jeer.
I know.
I'm going to cheer Alexander Ovechkin. He's engaged. So
That's a cheer that just got created in the course of the last 20 minutes looking at Twitter.
No, absolutely not. It was something that I wanted to bring up. It was announced earlier this week on Instagram. So one of the greatest scorers in the world is going to marry a very fine-looking Russian model, I must say. I'm all about love, Drew, and love is in the air. So congratulations to Ovi.
Richard?
I'm actually going to cheer Connor McDavid this week. I'm like, he's not arrogant, and he seems to be the most likable guy to come in, and he knows his role, and by all accounts is going to be incredible. And I think it's going to be great for the game, regardless of if he's playing in Edmonton or not. I think it's going to be great for the game to have this much attention on him, and then Jack Eichel in the other conference, and since Crosby and Ovechkin really where there'll be this kind of a rivalry. So I think it's great for the game.
I don't think Drew should be allowed to criticize my cheers anymore.
Yeah, I think we should have statute of limitations on times for cheers.
Fair enough. And I'm going
20 seconds, then you can't criticize the cheer.
I'm going to cheer Jaina Hefford, Jillian Apps, and Catherine Ward. All three announced their retirements from the Canadian women's hockey team this week. Tremendous careers for all three of them, winning multiple gold medals and world championships. So congrats to all of them on great careers for the Canadian women's national hockey team. That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Paul Edmonds, Daniel Briere, and Bill Hoppe. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes and on tsn1290.ca and on illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba, and Keener Jerseys. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to producer Rory, for colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball and Blue Bombers game day later on today on TSN 1290.